Welcome, everybody, to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson, at Densonology on your social media dial. In case you guys are tuning in for the first time ever, this show covers all things innovation, ideas, creativity, smart people doing smart things. And I think I may just audition today, so just be on the lookout for me to drop some bars and or some flat singing. But it works for me.
Well, I'm the worst singer, worst rapper. So
at least maybe from a group. You got to hold a record of some sort.
Yeah, maybe from a group.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, we could do mumble rap.
I do it daily. I heard a mumble rap song that was also fast rap today, and I started on Rich the Kid. Congratulations on signing him, by the way. And then I went to something else, and it was like, you know, Spotify is just like, the next song. I was like, what is that? He rapping fast and mumbling? That's, you pick a lane.
Fast mumble?
Exactly. Al Branch, say hello.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing?
Good.
Live and direct from House Queens.
Oh, you said everyone. You didn't say me, but I answered it. I answered for everyone.
Okay, please. They trust you. They listen to you. It's about you right now.
Exactly.
To you.
Yeah, why don't you review me? Let's start.
Chris, how are you?
I'm good. I'm feeling really great.
Great.
We got this group kicking off.
Yeah.
So let's just start with a little 101. How do you explain what Al Branch is?
I'm a person, I'm a human being.
It's a good start.
just a really fun-loving, you know, fun-loving guy who just wants everyone to be happy and win, and, you know, just love music, the passion for music. Like, I got my friends, all the teams, like, Al, you know, what you want to do? I was like, I want to make records, man. The rest of my life, I'm a record guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do no other shit.
Yeah.
I don't want to invest in real estate companies.
right.
The paint on the signs, and it's cool. I don't want to pickle trucks. I just want to just work and find great artists and do fun shit.
How does that start? Because, you know, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it.
Yeah.
So, and I think you have one of those roles, and we'll get into it, but like, it's sexy on the surface, and everybody's like, oh, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
But to actually get in it and do it well. Like, when did that all start for you?
You know, I'm in the rare situation because, like, I have, like, some of the best partners and friends that ever can imagine. So I think that's what I was lucky on, this, like, manifestation, getting a good team together, you know, and it's like, and just learn to appreciate the team and, you know, the differences and strengths and weaknesses of each person on your team and utilizing it to the fullest. You know, I never had a problem. You know, I played basketball at a high level as a kid, so I've always understood team concepts. I was never the star on the team.
Right.
I was a good rebounder and block shots.
Sorry
to
hear
defense.
No, I'm just sorry to hear you weren't the star of the basketball.
Well, you get in what you put out of shit. Like, you know, you want to take summers off in eighth grade, you know,
right.
Like on the pros, I'm like, I think it's summer. It's too hot. I think
warm.
It's summer off.
It's too warm to be good.
Warm. It's too warm. It's concrete. This asphalt is smoldering.
It's asphalt. Is this collecting heat?
Yes. That's how I felt. I was like, man, it's just a lot. And but it was the best thing in my life, man. So I went to, you know, I played high school basketball in Queens, you know. Queens, New York City, you know, growing up in that, it's like basketball's a thing. It's like a religion for us out there. And so, you know, I played, you know, during high school, and I went to this really one of the best basketball camps called Five Star. And I went my sophomore going to junior year and had a good time. Then I went back my junior going to senior year, which is my last year. So, you know, when I went my final year, I mean, you're talking about like, everybody from like Stephon Marbury, everybody at this camp,
wow.
A lot of the alumni, the all-stars, most of them went to the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Like, I mean, I was there, like, with Rasheed Wallace, Travis Best, Orlando Antigua, who plays for the Globetrotters for a while. But anyway, what changed my life was, so, you know, you get there, and it's hell, because it's like, training camp meets skill camp meets basketball. Like, it's crazy. It's like some other shit. It's like, it's the first time you're in prison.
Get 1 hour out of the
no woman.
1 hour of rest is like the opposite of prison.
No woman, no females whatsoever. I hate that. I hate this already. Anyway, so it's like, no, but you get up like, since 6 a.m., you heard this loudspeaker. It was like August, 6 a.m. in the middle of mountains and shit. It's like literally 45 degrees.
Right.
And you hear this Frank Sinatra music. And that's how you wake up. The Frank Sinatra music. You got 15 minutes to be dressed and on the court for your first workout, for your morning workout.
Right.
I was like, this shit sucks. So, and you be starving, man, and you can't eat until you work out.
Jeez.
Oh, man, it was terrible. It was so cold.
It's one thing I hear often with people from New York is like, and early on, like building of networks, like people you didn't know were going to grow to be like, there was a guy I talked to, he was like, oh, I went to summer camp, same, very similar story. It wasn't a basketball camp, just like a summer camp. And he was like, XYZ went to this person went there, and they were like 11, 12, 13, 14. And suddenly, you know, you grow up.
It
went, 40 years later, I'm just kidding. 3 years later.
Almost 3 years later.
You know, and suddenly you like, it's still part of your DNA.
Yeah.
So, you started off talking about, you want to see people win.
So I'm going to tell you what happened. So here's what changed my life, right? Here's what I learned about being lazy and not just kind of faking it. So, like I said, went to the camp for a second. Yeah, I knew this was my shot, you know, best camp. So I go to the camp and I'm playing well. But I'm in, like, the second league. So it's the Premier League and I'm in the second league. So I'm in the second league and it was a guy on that team, and me and him was the workhorse of the team. Like, it was me. His name was... holy shit.
That's a crazy name.
Alvin Williams.
Oh, okay. That was,
I think Alvin Williams, right? So so we're playing. So he's from Philadelphia. We're playing ball. We're getting along like that. Next day, 2 days later, he's gone. I'm like, we got a game with Alvin. Oh, he got promoted to the higher league. And I was like, okay, cool. So I still made the All-Star team in my respective league. It wasn't the Division I league. It was like, you know, the D2 league. I was still
pissed right.
about. I made the All-Star team. And I realized, like, you know what? I didn't give him all. I'm not going hard enough. And that motherfucker played hard, and he went to the NBA.
Yeah.
He played for Toronto Raptors.
That's crazy.
But I knew from that moment, I was like, you know what? I said, this music, it's not going to be.
Right.
And I was like 17 years old. I said, this music shit is all I really care about.
That's...
I'm not willing to get up every day and play ball 8 hours a day. I want to take summers off.
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, my daughter's been applying to high school. She's 13. Yeah. And she wrote her essay on this idea of being good at something and being passionate about something.
Yes.
And it was like, being good is, like you said, like you were decent in basketball. Yeah. You could have gone on. For her, it was dance, right? Yeah. And then swim became the thing that she was passionate about.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't good at it.
Yep.
Didn't have any experience, but same thing. Got promoted up the ranks in the team and became swimmer of the month. Not that the show was about my daughter. You know, said, so, like, what was that like stepping into passion out of something?
I mean, it was life changing because that's the moment I realized. I knew, I said, no excuses. And I was like, if I love something, I would never let my passion not equal, you know, my work output. You know what I'm saying? And I had to really and I learned that at 17 years old. So, like, when I got, you know, fast forward to when I, well, let's go back. Since I was like 14 years old, I wanted to be in the music industry. What happened was an older cousin of mine was in the music industry back in the 80s, and he just inspired me. I went to his house for like an Easter dinner or something like that, and he had DJ equipment, paid attention to me. I was 12, 13 years old, and that was it. I fell in love with it. So so since that day, I was trying to get internships at different record labels. So ironically, I'm from Howard, Queens. There was a record label, a distribution record label called Relativity Records and Red Distribution was not till you literally 4 blocks from my house in the hood. I don't know why they were in the hood, 4 blocks from my house.
Right.
And I would go and stand inside. And they had, so their roster was like Chi Ali, Common,
Young Wild
Fat
Strapped,
Joe.
Like Chi Ali.
Fat Joe. You got the flow, Joe. You know, all that. You know, you're talking
original
about like,
Fat Joe.
Yeah, this is like 89, 90.
Yeah.
89. I was like, yo, I just got an intern. I got, get out of here, kid. I'm like, please. I said, I just want to enter on the work. Get out of here, kid. I was like, oh, fuck.
Was it hot, though?
Yeah.
So basketball, you're like, it's too hot. Internship, you're like, right.
AC is inside.
You felt the cold air come out when they opened the door?
I didn't hear. The cold air coming out. Yeah, so, and they was like, get out of here, kid. I was like, fuck. So then I would apply for all these, like, I don't know how they found this for me. I would apply for all these internships for music engineering. That was for the music business. I was, like, in high school, and nothing would take. So I got to college, and, you know, I started hanging out, you know, and ironically, my best friends, Chris Atlas, me and Chris went to college together. Mm. So Chris is like, he's executive VP at Warner Brothers now. So we was like, he's a ride trans girl. Yo, man. So I mean, he got his first internship at Tommy Boy. Wow. And I got mine at a label called Pendulum Records. And I was like, yeah, kid, we own, we popping right now. All right, cool, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I interned this shit. So, yeah, so I got my first internship when I was in college at a label called Pendulum Records. And Pendulum, their roster was like Diggle Plans. They just won a Grammy for Diggle Plans first album, Cool Like That. Mm-hmm. Lords of Underground. They had an older adult contemporary artist named Chris Walker. They had signed Lisa. You know, so I interned there the fall of 94. And I was like, I was technically like a sophomore in college, but I lied and said I was a junior and senior.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't check, so. I ain't here now. I'm here now.
It's interesting because it's all a different kind of hustle, right? As far as, you know, on the show, we have a lot of, mm-hmm. I mean, I've had people from GE on, like very corporate and state institutions. And the path is a little bit more traditional, right? Like you don't stand in front of GE and wait to get an internership and become the CMO later, right? Exactly, but I think, you know, before I go there, just do a little bit of bragging on today. You know,
like my internship was fall 94 and at that time, so I worked on like, you know, at the internship, I was looking to work on like Lords Underground, Diggle Plans, mm-hmm. Heather B, her first single, that out. Heather and I are still friends to this day.
Original Real World.
Original. Locks Down. World Locks
exactly,
Down.
Exactly.
Yep. So then that happened, and then, the company was having, you know, they were having some distribution issues and stuff. So my mentor, Charles Dixon, was like, yo, I want to meet someone. So I went and met this older attorney named Louise West, prominent, influential black female attorney. Mm. She's like the grandmother, she's going to kill me for saying that. She's like the big sister, the godmother of like.
You said God the first time. Right?
Yeah, I said the first time. The godmother for black executives.
Wow.
And she's really looked out for a lot of us in so many ways. But so at that time, she was actually the attorney for Timbaland and Missy, you know. And so she was like, oh, I want you to meet. It was like December 95. She's like, oh, I want you to meet, you know, some of my former clients. You probably love them. And walked Jay-Z and Damon. Mm. And they were like, yo, you know, good to meet you. Like, you know, we got a new label situation. You just come fuck with us. I was like, bet. I was like, oh, man, I'm excited. I'm like, man, I'm in college. I'm at this point, I'm interning and I'm helping right. out with this a label. So my lawyer had an independent label she was partners with another West Coast guy. Actually, he's a songwriter named Gary Taylor. So Gary Taylor was adult urban adult contemporary artist. But he wrote a bunch of records for like Vanessa Williams.
Oh wow!
I think he wrote Sweet Love.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I think he wrote some of Nita Baker stuff too. But he was his own man, like self. So he has his own label situation going on.
Right.
So I was like, shit. I was like, you're talking about December 95.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot. You know what I'm
saying?
Amazing,
yeah.
So then I finally called Damon and Jay-Z. And Damon was like, yo, come see me after I get back from Gavin, the convention in Atlanta. I was like, all right, great. No problem. So I called Gavin Day, stalked me, fine. Yo, come down. Come see me. I like, you may have a assistant, kid. Come see me. I was like, yeah.
Right. That's bad, dude. What
I was trying to do. 22 years old, that's bad, dude. In my time, I want this. So I went, and, you know, it was like, you know, love at first sight. You know, it was all good. You know what I'm saying? I love the company. Met Jay. You know, they had a vision. Damon was hilarious. But Damon, you know, I give Damon a lot of credit, man, because he really, like, gave me the tools to learn, man. And there's never.
Absolutely.
One thing I love about Damon, man, like, he just really gave you information and support you. If he believed, he believed in you.
And he still does. Yeah. Like, I had a chance to interview him at Magic, or not okay. Magic, the Agenda.
The Agenda, yeah.
And the same thing. Like, he was just giving game to the audience. It was so great.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, man, like, the one for Damon, I don't know where I'd be. I mean, I'm sure I would be here, but I wouldn't be in this capacity because I think he gave me the real, like, the past.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I was like, when I started at Rockefeller, I was like, it was March 96, so I was 23 years ago. And I was like 22 years old, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I quickly rose the ranks, and I was in every meeting.
What's the big difference between what you learned previously, mm-hmm. or maybe how you learned previously to that shift in being with Rockefeller?
Like, because, I didn't really, the internship and working with, the Morning Crew Records thing, the indie label, I learned different things. Like, because mm-hmm. of that, when I started out in the music business, my first job was called indie retail marketing. So indie retail marketing for boys and girls, for all the young folks, there's be things called record stores, mom and pops, like in every neighborhood. There'd be like the record store you went to. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew you and they tell you what was good this week and what's coming out.
So I got all my mixtapes.
Of course. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I was the guy. So in Detroit, I had a Puffer Reds.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Yeah.
So I would call Puffer Reds, 23 years ago.
Right.
Hey, you got a new Jay-Z single? How's the song for you? Your song good? No problem. Thanks. I was called tracking. So I would call I had 500 independent record stores that would call. Mm. And I would just check up on, how things were selling. And then, I could be honest, I think Stats Limitations are over now. And then, in those days, it was like, okay, well, here's some cleans.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So cleans were the albums or the CDs that you got from the manufacturer that wasn't marked up, so you can give it. It's like free money.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give the cleans to my best, constituents, and they would say, check the sound scan this week. Oh, cool. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
That's not quickly learn how to manipulate sound scan. We won't talk about that. That was a long time ago.
This is the old algorithm.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. I probably shouldn't put that on. There's probably some FCC violations I might be.
Just self-incriminating.
Yeah, exactly. Let me not say that part. So that was my job. It was an important thing. Because, hip hop in those days, really lived in hip hop and rock. Born and raised in independent retailers. Know what I'm saying? Because they have the trust of the community, because they were in the community. So they had the trust of the community. So when I went to a record store for the weekend and say, what's dope? What's good? Hey, check this out. So I went one time. It was like, shit, it might have been spring of 96.
Mm.
Hey, it was a retailer named Cy Lerner at Hot Wax. And I'm like, yo, Cy, what's going on? What's popping? You may like this. It was a Maxwell CD. I was like, okay, cool. Maxwell, Hank Square. I was like, good. So I went to the office, and I'm jamming. And Dave was like, what the hell is that? I was like, Maxwell. He's like, yo, this kid's hot. So then the whole office had Maxwell.
Oh, wow.
And then we started hanging out with Maxwell. And I'm telling you, the first album, he was on fire. And it's like, so that was the magic of independent retail. So you fast forward nowadays, speaking of innovation, we don't have that anymore.
Right.
There's no trusted person in the community that you see every day that's saying, you're like this. Well, this is for you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We don't really have that in real
personal,
time.
Like, personal, like, curation. Yeah.
So, that was that. So back to the roster. So, Jay-Z, obviously the Jay-Z situation. Then we signed a group called Christian.
That was
based out in the Bay Area.
Two brothers, right?
Yeah. That was our first signing. That was where our first signing, Rockefeller. We had another girl named Roughness, but I don't think she never came out really. So Christian, and we found them when we were at my first trip to LA was in June of 96,
mm-hmm.
and with Jay-Z and such. And we went to the Parati office, and one of the employees, I forgot her name, really, really cool lady. She was like, yo, guys, check this out. And it was Christian. I was like, we love it. We got to sign this shit.
Yeah, they were dope. And then one of them went solo for a while.
Yeah. Alan Anthony, yeah. So then we started to expand the roster. So Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
But when Kanye was at the label, I wasn't there anymore because I left Rockefeller four years later, and I went to Elektra. So when I left Rockefeller, we probably just had, Clue albums. Mm-hmm. We had Beanie Siegel. I was a part of the Beanie Siegel thing. We had State Property stuff. Basically, Oblique.
Oblique.
So then I went to Elektra, and then Elektra, that's when I felt it was more big time. Corporate structure.
Right.
I was in the skyscraper building on 6th Avenue.
No, that was, yeah, 12, 19.
Well, it's an interesting progression, right? You go from, like, task to empowerment to, like, business.
Yeah.
And, like, it's an interesting trajectory to be that. What's been your, like, you've talked about teaming. One thing I noticed about you is you remember very intricate details. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important when you're building relationships, right? Yeah. Like, I know where I met you, what your name is, what your cousin was doing.
Right. Yeah.
What do you say has been your, maybe that's part of it, but your secret to the staying power?
It's passion and no one to shut the fuck up. It's having passion, but no one to fuck up, shut the fuck up. Because you know what it is? It's like, and I tell people all the time, the reason why a lot of people fail in the music business because they don't have a team. This is a cutthroat, trippy ass, moody ass business.
Yeah.
If you don't have people on your team who got you, you know, got your back 1,000%, right, wrong, or indifferent, you're not really going to make it because you can't trust, you know what I'm saying? Everybody wants something from you and trying to get something and you don't know who looks at your back. So having that team, you kind of know how to maneuver things. And some people don't even know people on my team. So it's even, that's even funny. Like, oh, you didn't realize that? You know what I'm saying? Oh, I heard you. You know what I'm saying? But so it's like, I think that's been the secret of my success is having that team. And also this, like I said, maintaining the passion. Like one of my good friends, Gabe Tesario, he's like one of the heads of Def Jam Press in the early Kanye days. we going to be venting shit. He's like, Al, keep the passion, lose the emotion, bro. Lose the emotion, bro. I was like, you're 100% right.
Advice.
You're 100% right. So it says that keep the passion, lose the emotion.
What was that part of it? Because I find that with a lot of entrepreneurial people, right? You go from like, this is whatever, your passion is so closely attached to your creative energy.
Yeah.
But then you have to separate it. And it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I just think that I think life's about accountability. And I spent a lot of time like this. We've spent a lot of time, you know, talking to different people from different walks of life and, you know, getting their jewels or their thoughts. But also spend a lot of time like, you got to fix your shit in life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I look at a lot of people and I'm like, but you got to fix your shit, man. Yeah. Like, you got to face this. We all have our demons and our issues. And I'm not trying to say, like, you should be. I don't think anyone should try to make every deficiency. You know, you shouldn't fix every deficiency. I don't think you should. And I always felt that way, but it was confirmed when I ran into, I hope I'm not quoting this wrong, but I ran into some former Google employees, and they run a thing called Zoo Labs in the Bay Area.
Yep.
Vanita and her husband Dave, right?
Yeah.
So I met them, and they were like, yeah. So the Google way is that you don't really fix your weaknesses; you just find someone on your team who can strengthen your weaknesses,
right?
But you do what you do best. So their theory is always about do what you do best. Don't worry about fixing what you're not good at.
Right.
You find someone that could do that and likes to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, I always felt that way. I felt it was crystallized. Like, damn, I always felt that way. Like, why am I going to look? If you're good at shooting, then I'll make sure you shoot. I'm going to grab the rebound. I was cool with that.
Right.
But you can't shoot, grab the rebound. You can't do all these things. It's impossible. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I
think there's very few all around players.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you got to divide and conquer. And this is very much a marathon approach. This business is a marathon. And so, like, now, like, when I meet new artists now, you know, I always try to talk them through the process because I always try to say, you know, I really don't want to sign anybody else. What do you mean? I was like, well, you know, there's so many pitfalls. Let me tell you some stories. And I always try to see where they're at mentally and what they're trying to accomplish. But, you know, like that's why, like I knew when I met G-Eazy, this guy's a superstar. I knew G-Eazy got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, this is a 6'4 white kid, looks like a supermodel.
We say he's gonna make white people cool again.
Yeah, of course. He made white folks cool again.
I read that. I was like, that's
how he made white folks cool again.
Which he did, which is funny because
that was a goal.
I quoted that. I walked into All Saints and I put on a jacket and I made a joke. I was like, I look like G-Eazy. And then I was with my wife and I told her, I was like, this dude said that G-Eazy was gonna make
white folks cool again. Because for me, they wasn't cool for me.
Right. No, he definitely.
Not again. But yeah.
Well, okay. So, the quick anecdote along those lines, right? You also added a quote of you saying, you know, you're either a song, an artist, or a brand.
Yeah.
And when you explained G-Eazy, it was like you saw the James Dean coolness of it, but reinvigorated.
You know what? Because he understood song structure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. Understand how to write a song is so important.
Right.
You know, a lot of these guys, we jump with the mumble rappers. Some guys, Rich Kid knows, believe it or not, Rich Kid understands how to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really does. He understands the start, the progression, the piece of advice. You can't really teach that.
Right.
And a lot of times, if you have an artist who doesn't understand that in the studio, it becomes very frustrating. I don't do the analog stuff, right, but I've been enough times to say someone doesn't get it. You know, it's the most frustrating thing in the world when they don't get those simple intricacies, right, of how to make a record. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So, like, when I say, okay, this guy has a look, he has charisma, you know what I'm saying? He has a style, you know what I'm saying? And he understands song structure.
Right.
I'm not trying to say, and a lot of times, me, I might like a song, but I know consumers won't love it. But the difference for me is that I know what I've been thinking, what I like, and what consumers would like. Right.
You're not attached to
it. Yeah, I'm not attached, and I don't blur lines. You know what I'm saying? I'm a fucking concurse. Proceed. My favorite part of Tombstone.
You seen the movie Tombstone? Yes, a long time
back ago. Back in the days?
Yeah, yeah.
So remember they had the shootout, and what's the crazy one, the drunk one? Doc Holliday.
He was about to die.
Yeah. He was like, so he's a shootout and shit. He gets back in the bar and he's like, proceed, sir. And they're going to shame me. That's how I felt. So anyway, as I shall proceed. I kind of feel like, you know, like I tell people all the time, like, you know, you really get, keep it real, man. We're lucky. You look at the charts, you probably get about 5 bona fide hits per year. Mm-hmm. It's probably 5 real hit records per year. I mean, hit records are records that make you stop and say, what the fuck that is here?
Right.
What is that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It happens probably like 5 times a year.
Well, speaking of which, congratulations on the Billboard 100.
Oh, thank you.
That's amazing. Because I think that like aligns well with what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Like being able to steer an artist and an entire like team toward, you know, stardom and repetition of success.
Because you got to know what it is. So my thing is like, we got to stop bullshitting ourselves. I'm blunt. I tell a client, like, yo, this is not a hit, B. It's not a hit record. But it's okay. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We'll get one. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. That's called arts development. You know what I'm saying? Because I tell artists all the time, the worst thing in the world to be is like, no one knew who you last year, and now you somebody.
Right.
With this record attached to you. That's a hard thing.
Well, I was thinking about that. So I've been thinking about this for a long time, mm-hmm. right? And I put a thing on Facebook once, and I was like, how many artists do we know that never beat their first album? Like, just in terms of like, oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And then the second, third, fourth, I mean, like, okay, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right? So why is that?
So many reasons. For one, I think we have a lot of, you know, the music industry is based on a lot of very orchestrated, very contrived, you know what I'm saying? Very, very, very success driven, you know, which is, unfortunately, I think female rappers have been the biggest victim of that. You know, this being contrived and someone, you know, doing everything for you and you showing up like, hey, I'm here. You know, it's like, you know, I think that's been the case. So I think what happens is you have a lot of situations where like, you know, there was never soul direction behind it in the first place.
Right.
They just got lucky and somebody orchestrated hits for them and they just like, okay, cool. And they fell in place. But they really, really, truly have a real, you know, foundation for themselves.
Right.
And they know who they wanted to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes you're just not that good. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes records come out. It's in the moment, it's in the mood. People love it, but it's really not that good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so along those same lines, going back to this, you know, song, artist, or brand, how do you discern which is which? Let's say you first encounter a new artist, you know, how do you discern which one?
Okay,
is
so
which?
I got
or
so,
not mistake one
so,
for the other.
So there was this. I just signed, you know, with my partner Gene and G. This artist, who I think is going to be like a groundbreaking artist. Mm. You know, he's not reinventing the wheel, but he's interpreting it his own way. His name is Safe. And so what happened was, so one of my really good friends.
In your brand new bio.
Yeah. So my updated revised bio.
When I came in this morning, I was like, I say, all right, cool.
Perfect timing.
Proceed.
Yeah, I said proceed. Continue to rock the mic. So Safe, you know, when my really good friend, Steve Carlos, you know, he discovered him, nurture them, put the project together. I was like, this is incredible. But when I could hear music and feel a vibe, because I'm really like, I always say like,
anything from 1970 to current and like R&B hip hop, I know it. I know that shit back and forth. Mm-hmm. I can take a sample. Well, yeah, label, all that shit. Wow. You know, I'm into that shit really big. You know, because I consider myself to be a fucking a critic at this point. I'm a critic in my life, and I'm a critic.
Yeah, you get a little smoking jacket and sit back and just listen.
Exactly. And I'm going to be a thin pencil mustache, you know. And I'm going to drink, but I'm only going to drink my Cavassier out of a stainless steel flask.
Nice.
I'm going to go.
I pictured chalice, but that's.
No, do the flask. I'm more portable. So you know, when you hear certain things, it reminds you of certain things. So, like, when I heard this guy, I said, damn, this is like, it's weekendish. I get the relation, but it's also Sade, but it's a vibe here. Mm. And for me, like, I've been doing this for so long, I can tell when someone's really got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I was like, damn, he gets it. You know what I'm saying? He gets simplicity. But one thing I always know about music, certain things are undeniable. Tones are undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an R&B or pop artist and your tone is on point, you can really do no wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, think of Halsey. Mm-hmm. She's not my client, but her tone is fucking money.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's her every fucking time.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's her cadence, how she says things. So like, I could hear someone say, okay, this is good. This is gonna be, it's different, it's innovative.
Right.
You know, it's because nothing's really new. Everything's kind of repurposed and reimagined.
Absolutely.
So as a marketing person, and man, I'm wrong for this, but I try to put things in boxes. And man, I'm wrong for doing that.
Right.
They don't stay, but for my mind to comprehend, I got to say, this belongs here, or this is here, this is what this is about.
Right.
You know, I may change, you know, as time goes on, but I have to start with somewhere. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times, I could tell by the body of work. And I always tell artists, don't put out one single, put out a body of work. Put out 5-6 songs.
Absolutely.
Because you put one song out, you sell the song. You need to sell your brand.
Did you see what Tierra Whack did?
No, but I love her. No, I did see some of the stuff. So one of my
the whole album is 1 minute. Like it just the song just cuts off, and it's like you absolutely want more of it.
Oh,
and
that might drive me crazy.
It does drive me crazy, but it'd be different if she wasn't as good as she was.
She's good. She's really good. She's really good. Yeah. She's good. And one of my really really close young homies, ironically, is my. Is my brother-in-law, but not my whatever. My brother-in-law. So my oldest daughter is from Philadelphia. Her uncle was there almost a year or two apart. His name is Swizzy Mac.
Okay.
He put me on. Ironically, this guy sat in my fucking patio in land 3 years ago and put me on to Rich the Kid, Tierra Whack, Famous Dex, all these crazy kids. And I'm like, who the fuck? You know what I'm saying? Like he knew it because he's 23 years old. He knew it. He was 20 years old. But so I know Tierra Whack is dope. And like I said, that's a brand. She's not being about this song. That's what it is. Like, you have to be a brand. You have to be more than just that song because the song won't make it anymore.
So in many ways, your job as CMO, obviously to market the company and all those things, but also to market these artists and help them figure out their own marketing. So you take somebody like Nicki, right, who becomes an iconic brand and also begins to align with other brands, the Pepsis of the world and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How do you steer that part of it? Like the expansion of the brand? Because you go from tone and like, okay, you know how to write a song to dominance, I guess.
You got to know what you're selling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like Nicki is pretty easy because, first of all, she's the smartest motherfucker ever. She's super smart. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? She gets it. You could, like, start off with, like, 1, 2, 3, and she'll go to 10 million on you. She just, nice. You know, she's so smart and so cerebral. But, so a lot of times what you try to find brands going to be in line with what the artist's personality is.
Right.
Like, I believe that you shouldn't, like, work of brands you don't really believe in. Absolutely. You don't really believe in because it's like, you know, it's going to be disingenuous. And I think the one thing that artists need to understand about fans and the fan relationship, it has to be genuine.
Right.
It's got to feel genuine.
Yeah.
Like, they're there for a particular reason. And nowadays, it's harder and easier now than it was when I first started because I didn't have the tools when I first started. You know, I didn't know who the fans were. I couldn't talk to fans in Spokane. I couldn't talk to fans in Alaska.
Yeah.
I just put the fucking record out, and I went to a show. Hope people showed up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Crickets.
You know,
I guess we shouldn't come back here.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, but it's funny because when I first started, like, you know, with Jay-Z and shit, and everybody did this. Back in the days, like, when you got booked for a show, you knew to go to a station before the show and do an interview.
and go do your show. Everyone knows that. Nowadays, I got clients now, like, you're not going to radio?
Like, but like, it's the radio.
I'm like, dude, like, you're supposed to go here at least and, like, tell people you're in town, but they don't have to anymore because they got the social media stuff.
Right.
So it's like, hey, just touch down. Where's the kid? I'm in town. Off 5 million followers because I'm in town. You know,
meet me in 10 minutes. Like, yeah, okay.
Exactly. You know,
again, I think with extending that brand, I think there's this other piece of it. You told this great anecdote in another setting about Kanye and the deal with Nike.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't perceive him as an athlete. And it surprised me just because, you know, from the outside looking in, you go like, it's Kanye or it's Nicki or it's whomever, whatever artist. It's an easy yes. And I think there's always a perception problem with who the talent is and what the brand thinks of them and whether it fits. Like, how do you, because that's all a pitch process, right? It's pitching and saying, convincing that brand or that artist to, like, collaborate.
Yeah, so, I mean.
How does the pitch work?
Well, I mean, I haven't pitched anything in a while because I did a really smart thing and hired somebody way better than me at this called named Matt Ferrigno.
Nice. <Yeah.
laughs> I collect talent. Like, you're really good at this shit.
That's right.
Come work with us. Let me step out of your way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always say, like, buy, sell, merge. If I'm going to buy the company, I'm merging, or I'm selling this shit because it's not worth it. But so it's like, so I found good talent. Yo. Let's get together and do what we do. But a lot of times, to answer your question, a lot of times it's not really the pitch because they come to you most of the time knowing what they kind of want. The biggest struggle you have is once you're getting the deal done is the deliverables and trying to get them to understand the artist world and the artist world living. It's like, well, this doesn't make any sense and here's why. Or Nicki or Kanye wouldn't do it this way or Jay-Z would do it this way. You know what I'm saying? It's trying to get them to understand, okay, now I know what your agenda, but now I'm going to take it to the world, how we get this done. So it seems genuine to your constituents and our constituents. Because you don't want to feel like someone threw a Pepsi can in your hand and you don't really ever drink Pepsi.
Yeah. Well, I used to run the innovation practice at OMD, and Pepsi was one of my biggest clients. And not Pepsi, but just a ton of other you know, clients would be like, let's just get them to do X, Y, and Z. And you're like, that's way off for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always this perception and interpretation issue that needs to be negotiated.
Yeah.
Right? You know, well, can you, you know.
And it's so funny because speaking of that, for example, because I ran into one of my good friends last night, Darren Woodhouse. And so me and Willie did a lot of things, been friends for a long time, but he was at Samsung. We did the Lil Wayne deal, which is an interesting deal because, like, I didn't really have to get involved in that because Matt Ferrigno and Tez took care of that. But anyway, so, but I'm aware of it. So, so no one expected the Lil Wayne Samsung thing to go the way it did. No one, they never saw it. They never saw it coming. Oh, we're going to do this thing. It'd be cool. They expect me to be on time. One, they expect me to be so professional.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they were just blown away. Sade was blown away. Oh my God, I love working with these guys.
That's great.
Dope.
They just gave me goosebumps.
Because you know, it happened. They're on. Because you know, they're on. So the campaign comes out and it's fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then we supposed to re-up. No, they told us, they said, this Lil Wayne campaign has the best numbers we've ever seen, best metrics we've ever seen. And they were on fire. And then speaking of fire, the phone started catching on fire.
What? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then they panicked.
Yeah.
They panicked. And we had no Lil Wayne campaign.
Actually burned my jerry curl on a Samsung
phone. Oh, man. Yeah. Damn, that's man. Shit's what happened. Yeah. Oh, that's how it starts. Well,
that's how it all got bolt.
Yeah, man. Be careful.
Jerry curl fire.
Yeah, man. You know, you practicing.
In 2017.
Wow. So. Can you still find Activator now?
Yeah, I make my own.
You're the carefree curl?
Yeah.
Or Jerry curl?
I had an S curl.
Yeah.
Graduated to Jerry.
No California curl?
I'm from Detroit, man. S curl.
S curl's good.
Pump waves.
As far as you go, you gonna put some gaiters on? You gonna put some pink gaiters on?
All right, proceed.
So yeah, so shall I proceed? Change about the mic. So what happened was, so you know, they had a little snafu and I probably called on fire. I was like, but we had another campaign. They was like, they backed out. I was like, why would y'all back out of this thing? Like, we just changed the whole perception. And you know what I'm saying? Of what Samsung meant to consumers. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, I know, man. It wasn't enough. I was not good. It happens. But that's what I'm saying. A lot of times the brands don't necessarily trust the market. You know, and I think a lot of brands are not deeply attached with what the market demands from them. They're trying to make it be this way, but this is what people perceive it. And I think a lot of times it's like, you know, I think it's market research. I think it's going out there and knowing what people want and expect
you know, from the product, you know. And I was trying to tell him, like, I think you guys are overthinking this, you know, situation, because you have someone, Lil Wayne. This guy's an icon, you know what I'm saying? You should keep following it. And they didn't do it. With the first example I'm trying to say about what you said about how to attach brands and the artists together.
Sure.
That's you trying to make that magic. And sometimes when you have the magic, they still don't get it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You can't get that moment back, you know?
As we wind down,
the
show is called Innovation Crush. And you've seen a lot. You just mentioned the Samsungs of the world. You've seen new artists. I'm imagining you've traveled the world a lot. What have you seen out there that you're personally crushing on? You know, just something that's like gave you goosebumps recently. You're like, oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Oh man. Probably this 6 foot model. I seen at this event last week. Now I'm playing.
No, you're not.
Yeah, he said crush. I'm like, I mean, is that crush? I guess I should.
Innovation crush.
Actually, I had a meeting when you leave, or 12 meeting with this company. It's a company, and it's kind of like a GoPro situation where they made this video camera that can attach to, like, it's a wearable, right?
I think I know what you're talking about.
And the shit goes right to your phone. It streams right to your phone, right to your phone.
Right.
Oh man, I'm excited about that.
The BMX dude, black guy.
Williams?
No. Well, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Anyway, he has a series called Go.
Okay.
And it's a similar type of camera. And because BMX, he like goes, he bikes through all these cities. So he's done Japan, Paris, Tokyo, Paris, London, Miami. And it's just like probably like 8 minutes worth of first person video, but it's so clean and so well. So that's like, along those lines, that's my innovation crush. Like looking at the potential of what sorts of content that you can create. And like, I love when people take a nugget of something like that and like flip it into really dope creative. Like you put something in the hands of an artist, and like the mind goes a little bit different than even the people who invented the thing.
I mean, and that's what I'm definitely very innovative in the sense that I have several pet peeves in life. Like my biggest pet peeve in life is like my two biggest pet peeves is when people refer to God as a man. I got a problem with that. I'm like, don't refer to God as a man. It's a spirit.
Michael Beckwith said God created man in his image, and ever since then we've been trying to return the favor.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that's the. I'm gonna think
when
about
he still
that.
Had dreadlocks.
I'm gonna ponder on that.
Hairline.
But so my second pet peeve is like when you go to a fast food restaurant and they're gonna put the ketchup packets on your fries.
That's all right.
Lose it every time.
That's two very opposite ends of the spectrum.
Those are my two biggest like
God and French fries.
French fries.
French fries
with bacteria. Loaded ketchup packets on my French fries is the most disgusting thing on the face of. So anyway, so I always see myself as a person, and I think good companies try to solve problems. Right. And when I look at the whole tech world, what's innovative, what's cool to me is that they're trying to solve problems. And I think solving problems are what we all
absolutely is like. Doing things in I think there's a journey though. I think some things come out as a novelty and then they have meaning later. Somebody decides to apply meaning to it, or you know,
exactly.
So I think there's that collective, but yes, like,
I'm innovative and you know, so I appreciate products that solve problems. And business wise, I'm on the campaign now, you know, from innovation. I want to change management contracts. I think management contracts is unfair because I think I've been the victim of
mine is fair. Right, really? Right.
But
right.
Because my issue with it is like, you know, it's like, and I've been a part of so many times. Like I've started with artists from day one, had a great relationship with them, helped them grow. They're on top of the world and they fire me or we go separate ways for various reasons. But then they're still getting royalties on the records that I helped them create or the ideas that helped them. You know,
right.
Do the artists is getting paid? They're still doing shows, Staples Center. You know, the publisher's licensed songs getting publishing on it. The label's still getting Spotify checks, but the management is not getting anything.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's just not fair to me. Like whatever I worked on in that period of time, it's a separate entity. The way I feel it should be now is I'm trying to make it happen is that if I manage you today, Chris, and I'm managing you.
from this February 8th, 3-year period, February 8th, 2019 to 20, whenever that period ends, that's a separate entity. Mm. And I should get paid on that entity a royalty for the rest of my life. Because you are.
Right.
So why is why can I get paid? Why can I feed my family for the shit I created? Because most artists, to tell you, the managers in the studio, the artists side by side, dragging them out of girlfriends' houses, dragging them out of crack dens, making them do fucking things they don't want to do. Mm. And they're successful, so I don't get paid for it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how's my family eat? How do I survive?
I'm a quote Jay-Z. I'm going to quote you. But
yeah.
I heard people saying they made Hov.
Make another Hov.
Okay, so make another Hov.
And I did that. And I've done that.
Right.
I didn't make another Hov, but I made.
Right,
he's,
right.
He's right. He's right. He's right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I've done that. You know what I'm saying? I've done that with Kanye West. I've done that with Drake. I mean, I was there from. Different for me and my team. We're there from day one. I help discover this shit. If I don't discover it, I'm there for anything substantial. I'm like, yo, this shit is good. Let's fuck with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's me and my team. So, like, so for me, you know, when I first sat with Jay-Z, people didn't really believe in him. Nobody wanted to sign him. That's why he started Rockefeller Records.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When I first met Drake, he was like, man, you know, I don't know. I said, this best I've had record is a hit.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is a hit. I got you, bro. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, to me, I feel like, how's it fair that I could be on the, I mean, I've literally been in concerts where I made artists go to the studio and record songs.
Yeah.
They didn't want to. And it's a hit. So, like, why do I get paid?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not fair. So, I want to innovative. I want to innovate. I want to fix that problem. So me and my team, we want to fix that problem. Also, I feel, too, labels call me, yo, Al, you know, you want your man such and such. I'm like, oh, I meet with them. Because part of what I do, I feel it's almost like a ministry. I'm here to save young black males' lives.
Yeah.
Through hip-hop. That's amazing. If I could give someone confidence. Yeah. Like, I feel I helped save Jay-Z's life. The money was really in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
We first, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like me, the whole team, Damon, us, I love and supported him, help, you know, save his life and make him the person he is now. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I'm fine with that. I got the education. But the point I'm trying to say is that I just don't think it's fair that managers aren't being compensated for what they've done. And perpetuate forever. Like, why wouldn't I?
Yeah. I love, like, a complex problem like that and then discovering a simple solution, right?
Yeah.
And one that's fair and works for everybody.
Exactly.
But most people immediately go to, it's either black or it's white, right? Let's explore that thin line in the middle.
I'm like, let's do what's right.
And that happens in all sorts of businesses, right? Like, it's the same thing.
Let's do what's right. Let's do what's fair. You know what I'm saying? Because the whole point of this thing, the whole point of life, man, is about happy time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, being happy as possible and have a good quality life. You know, that's what the whole thing's about. So to me, it's like, if I realize that this made me unhappy and my team unhappy, I should try to fix it. So even like labels call me, hey, want you to manage such and such, a new us. I'm like, okay, I managed them. I want 15% from the artist management and I want the label to give me a 10% royalty. Yeah. Oh, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not crazy. Because, no, you're not crazy. Using me anymore. You're crazy. I'm going to make your shit. You have someone that's talented that you invested $1 million that you can't control or don't. You think you need my help. So I'm going to come and help you just for free? Get the fuck out of here. No, you're gonna pay me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or not. I don't care. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, the power of saying no and not needing shit is so liberating.
It's a beautiful feeling. And it's hard to do sometimes.
It's hard for me at first, too, because I felt like, damn, you not care so much. And I was like, yo, but do they care about me?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I realized, I took my pause. Man, we said, we all agree. We got time to be people taking advantage of us. We getting tired of it.
Last but not least,
mm-hmm.
complete this phrase for me.
Yep.
Innovation to me is?
Innovation to me is problem solving. In the sexiest, most concise way.
Which you just delivered. It was meta. It was a very meta response.
Yeah. You're from Queens.
It was like, concise. All right.
Meta World Peace. Shout out Meta World Peace. I'm a Laker fan.
Where can people go to find out more about you, Blueprint, the artist? It's such a massive ecosystem and world around you.
Yeah, I'm a little anonymous by choice.
I like to go to
my local strip club and not be noticed.
6'3" black dude.
Yeah, I want to go to a strip club and be unnoticed.
There you go. That's where you find the 6-foot innovation
crowd. Sometimes.
Right.
Most of the time.
Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crest. Thanks for doing this. This is awesome.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah. I feel innovative right now.
You are.
Thank you.
You felt it before you walked in the room. Nothing to do with it. I feel less innovative. That's the problem.
Come on, you, I know you got some good stories.
I had one. Okay. But that was a bad night.
Let me ask you a question. What do you feel is the most innovative thing about the music industry, in your opinion, most innovative currently?
I was going to ask you about collaboration. That was one thing. But yeah. I think also just there's a wide variety of choice out there, right? Like, yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking about Xavier Omar and Sango and, you know, these artists that are like B-plus level, like... My Spotify playlist at the end of the year was just so, you know, we went from that to, what's her name? Alaska. You know what I'm talking about. I was walking through, I told you I was going to sing. Through I see streams and.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I mean,
why know, it just glaze over.
Because it's not R&B and hip hop. It's pop.
And not only that, I think just the where the points of influence come into the craft.
Yeah.
Because you discover so much. I watch Revolt. That's why my first encounter with G-Eazy was watching Revolt TV. And the I Mean It video.
Yep.
And I was like, what is this?
Yep.
And then I just went down the rabbit hole. And I'm that guy that goes down the rabbit hole. If I find something that I like, next thing you know, I'm at the show. Because But it comes from all over the place, right? You just never know. So I think you look at the global influence of one artist, you know, and I mean, and not their influence, but our inputs to what they've created. It's just, that's why I love Tierra Whack.
Yeah, you know, and I think she does. Yeah. I mean, my only what's not innovative is record labels relying on Spotify and Apple to pay them.
Right.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, it's your music, you're a record label, you're worth billions of dollars. Build your own shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, I think that's a harder ask. I think it's more about diversifying revenue streams than it is about creating a platform for people to experience music. I think it's diversifying, like, where you show up as an artist, as a business, and how you show up and how you, like, slice yourself up into many avenues that still don't disrupt the brand.
And you're right. But that's the problem with the music industry. What happens in the music industry? Even my music industry went down the tubes a couple of years ago and lasted for 10 years. A lot of my good friends, some people lost their lives.
Yeah.
Because we relied on other people to sustain our ecosystem. And I'm like, if you're Universal, they say Universal's worth estimated $33 billion. You can build your own goddamn platform, streaming platform, and charge $3.99 a month for it. You know what I mean? Like, cut the middleman out.
I get it, but you know how hard it is to build a universe? It's like Louis C.K. once said, like, people were complaining
about it. It's not hard, you got money. You can buy them.
True.
Because, that's what Beats is. Apple Music is based on the fact that he bought Moog. What the fuck was called?
Right.
I mean, they bought this shit. So I just bought the new company. I'm like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, I worked with you. I was like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
But he bought something somebody else built, right?
And so made it better.
Right. So for me to start something from scratch, the work I need to do to get it to a level of impact of the competitors that you mentioned, it's a lot. It's not as turnkey as you would like it to be. I think there's smart avenues and smart plays you can do. And I, like you were talking about, would you say, hire, sell, or
buy, sell, merge.
I say acquire, mimic, or collaborate.
Okay.
Right?
I'm still that.
Thank you. It's in my book. I'm going to give it to you.
All right, thank you.
It's like you either acquire the company or you mimic the things that are working about it or you find a way to collaborate and everybody wins.
Exactly.
So, but I
got to I call it a really good marketing brain. I forget people's names. Anyway, he had this, Phil Pavone, he had this thing. He said, about 10 years ago, he said, Al's about competition. I said, what the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
He said, cooperate with your competition for a common goal. I said,
frenemies. For about 6 months, I worked on getting Hilton and Airbnb to work together.
Wow.
Right? And it didn't happen. But, like, we got everybody at the table. Yeah. Everybody was game for it because it's like, if I'm a Hilton Diamond member,
yeah.
why can't one of my membership perks be that I make money when I go stay at your hotel?
Exactly.
Airbnb, like I can Airbnb out my place while I'm staying at your yeah. place. So, yeah. you know, creating those win-wins. And yeah. I think if you, you know, like that thin line we talked about, the black yeah. and white, mm-hmm. it's a, like there's a solution there.
Yeah.
If you walk into the problem with an inventive spirit.
Yes.
Not like,
yes.
what, this is mine, that's yours. Yes. Like, yes. you want mine? Exactly. I'm not exactly. giving up mine. You,
exactly.
You're giving up yours.
Yeah.
So, all right. I really enjoy talking to you.
Oh, that's great. I look forward to hanging out with you in the future, man.
We yeah, man.
Together, man.
Thanks. Take everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.